On the Pilot TV podcast this week, we are back in the world of Guy Ritchie for Netflix's spin-off of 2019 movie The Gentlemen, insinuating ourselves into the royal bedchamber with Mary and George on Sky Atlantic, and back on the hunt for superpowers in Series 2 of Extraordinary on Disney+. But that's not all, because Julianne Moore joins us on the podcast this week, accompanied by Mary and George director Oliver Hermanis. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to the Pilot TV podcast, your essential guide to every show that matters, and a podcast that has spent the past few days in our mind palaces, assembling an elaborate wall of mugshots, drawing pins, little bits of string, and mathematical formulae to calculate timelines, all to determine which raging bellend was mean to Rebecca Ferguson. The investigation continues. Joining me in this inquiry, however, are my two fellow sleuths, Kaylock Holmes and Dr. John Boydston.
Good one. I like that.
I didn't know about this story, the Rebecca Ferguson story, until Kay alerted it to me this morning.
Yeah.
I was absolutely...
You're a few days behind the news cycle.
Because I've been working so hard on my head down, stuff, writing stuff.
I was genuinely surprised you hadn't heard about this, because it's all anyone's talking about, other than where Kate Middleton is and the Willy Wonka live experience.
That's right. Yeah, these are the three things that have captured the zeitgeist.
Yeah, maybe they're all somehow connected. but Kay was like, who is it? Which one is it? And she said, is it on the short list? I said, I don't think there's an official short list.
Oh, there's definitely a short list.
It's not an official one, though.
Not official.
She's done so much stuff.
There's not going to be an official shortlist.
You define official. She's not released
a
shortlist.
She's released a shortlist.
Yeah, that's...
like an awards ceremony.
Yeah.
I said there was a shortlist of three, and then I wanted his take on it, because I felt, for some reason, I felt like he would know. And he has suggested someone.
For those who don't know what we're talking about, in a recent interview, Rebecca Ferguson revealed that on a film project, I believe she said film, and it must have been quite some years ago, a co-star was incredibly horrible to her and reduced her to tears on set. And she basically came back on and told that person to fuck right off, and she then acted to the back of their head for the rest of the scene. So it was like, more power to her. But the internet is awash with speculation about who said person could be.
And because she said it was the first name on the list, so it was the lead actor.
Yeah, he was first billed, and she said that it wasn't Tom Cruise.
Yes, and she has... this is how much I was immersed in the story yesterday, because Twitter was going mad because she had started following Dwayne Johnson on Instagram, thus proving...
He made a statement saying, wow, this is awful. I'm glad you spoke up. Basically, it wasn't me, guys.
Yeah, and I want to know who it is.
Obviously, we're not going to name any names here because, you know, we don't want to get sued. But I think we all know who's on the unofficial shortlist.
Yeah.
The unofficial shortlist. Of course, the funny thing about this is you're bound to go through this whole story again for the Empire podcast, aren't you? Because it's actually about her making films. So,
We already recorded the Empire podcast. Did it come up? I don't remember. I don't think it did.
I don't remember. I mean, let's face it, you may have been distracted.
It's possible. Yeah, I don't really know what happened.
It may have been in one of the many segments of the Empire podcast where James isn't paying attention.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
His zone out, just so.
It could well have been that.
Exciting. But that was an amazing story.
Right. Now that we've got through the legally fractious part of the podcast, should we move on to what we've been watching? And I'm going to start. I'm going to start because you know what I've been watching?
What?
Shogun. But do you know why I've been watching Shogun?
It.
Oh, I have. But it's all kicked off. And let me tell you why.
Gosh,
yes. Kay knows. Anyone who's been on my Twitter feed will know that I made a very big deal about the quality of the subtitles and how amazing I thought they were on this show. Correct.
Yes.
Then, of course, Shogun dropped last week. People were very excited. And they were like, James, I was looking for these amazing golden subtitles you mentioned, and all I've got here is some regular old subtitles. So what are you talking about? And so a lot of people called me up on this saying, you know, am I doing something wrong? Like, these look like regular Disney Plus subtitles. What's happening? And I was like, oh, ridiculous, ridiculous. So I went and had a look on Disney Plus. They're not wrong. The subtitles are in the normal place, right down the very bottom. There's nothing else. I mean, don't get me wrong. They are well-presented subtitles. The font is very readable. They're blocked out. You know, it's all fine. But they're not where they were when I saw them, when I thought they were so good. And I was like, oh. So I thought, oh, I wonder if, you know, Disney had the move. Like, I wonder if there's a story here. So I said, well.
I mean, it would be a boring story.
So I came back and I said, look, guys, I've checked and you're absolutely right. They're not where I thought they were. Perhaps, and I added the showrunner, perhaps Justin Marks can shed some light on this incident. So he came back quite confused and said, can you send me some screenshots? Like, I'm very, like, you know, perplexed by this whole thing. So I was like, oh, getting into it. So I prepared my screenshots. I was already in the wrong place. But then I thought, hang on a second. So I went to my TV and I fired up screeners again. And on the press screeners, the subtitles have now moved down to the bottom. The conspiracy deepens. So not only did Disney Plus have these normal subtitles, but the press screeners are now quote unquote normal as well.
Can I ask you something?
I did not imagine the special subtitles.
That's an obvious question, yeah.
I did not imagine the special subtitles.
But how can it all have changed? I don't believe it would have changed.
No, I think it has. And I think what's happened is because I saw it early, I wonder if they were temp, it was temp subtitles. And because the episodes were unfinished, right, when I saw them. So, I mean, unfinished in that they didn't have end credits on, all the effects and everything was done. But I wonder if the subtitles were, because these subtitles have now been changed across screeners, and I'm, and another journalist mentioned to me or contacted me on Twitter to say they had noticed the same thing, that the screener subtitles are now different to how they were when they first watched them.
To back you up, and I hate to do that, when you first brought up this topic of the subtitles being good, particularly good, I did recognise what you meant. I thought, oh yeah, he's right, yeah, I remember, I had probably not as early as your screeners, but I had fairly early screeners, yeah. And I watched the first episode, and I did, when you said that about the subtitles, I thought, oh yeah, he's right, the subtitles were good.
Yeah.
So, in terms of size and placement.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I think you're
so where we are at the moment,
very mad.
The subtitles are basically flush with the bottom of the screen. So if it's a two-deck subtitle, yeah. The bottom deck is flush with the bottom of the screen. If it's a one deck, then that deck is slightly higher.
Is it letterboxed? Is it, I think it is, isn't it? Isn't it in a, it's not a,
yeah, it doesn't appear underneath, it, like it appears in the actual frame of the
does it not yeah. not in the black underneath
oh. No, it appears in the actual frame, but it's the bottom deck of it is roughly flush with the bottom of the actual frame, and if there's a single deck subtitle then it appears in the upper deck, so like slightly mm-hmm. above. But when I watched them, both decks were just below the halfway point on the screen, so really fucking high.
Was that not distracting?
No, actually it worked really, really well. It worked really well because it's one of those things where you didn't have to lower your gaze, you were just watching it and absorbing it, and I found it life-changing. Like, it was brilliant for me because I don't get on with subtitles and I really love them. But so I'm crushed to hear that either they changed their minds and changed them, or more likely, they were just temp on the screeners.
Do you think it's worth, just for the record, apologising anyway?
Saying no, yeah. No, absolutely not. But I did say to Justin Marks, the showrunner, I said, oh, don't worry, I've just noticed the screen is the same. I think they were temp, and he hasn't.
Okay, so what he's trying to say is he got it wrong.
I mean, I think it's safe to say that the creator of the show thinks James is losing it.
Well, the way I figured it, because he was slightly confused, I thought, there is no way the creator of the show hasn't had a quick look at it on Disney Plus, right? And surely if the subtitles were in the wrong place on Disney Plus, he'd have been like, I think the subtitles are in the wrong place. So I can only assume they are where he intended them to be.
Yes,
on Disney
Plus. I would always assume that.
Which seems fair. However, when I interviewed him, he did literally say they are higher in the frame than usual. That is something he said.
Oh,
he said they are unusually high in the frame.
Right.
Which is what spun me out, because I'm looking at them now and they're not.
This is my point about whether it's in scope or not, because if something's in 2.35, 2.39 to 1 aspect ratio,
I don't think it's quite that extreme
on TV
aspect, but yeah.
It's fairly obvious to stick the subtitles in the black bar.
And sometimes they do, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So so anything above that would be in a way unusually high in the frame.
Yeah, but they don't do that on this. Okay. But even then, like you wouldn't always, like you don't always put it in the bars at the top or the bottom.
No, but
also just to confuse matters just even further, the subtitles do appear in slightly different placement depending on whether you're watching it on your phone, a laptop or a TV, obviously, because they're not superimposed on the print, they're kind of, they float around a bit, but they're broadly speaking in the same place. It's really the size that changes,
right?
But in those early press screeners, really fucking high.
There'll be another few hours on this topic.
I would like to retract some of my snark, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I didn't realise you discussed it with the showrunner originally. And
well, this is it. But he was super excited about
James
it.
James has probably done his own spoiler special podcast with Chris Hewitt and Helen O'Hara.
Everyone but us.
And the showrunner.
I spoke to him for our Shogun sponsored special that we did.
Yes.
And we got, I mean, there was a lot of subtitle chat, quite frankly.
Clearly.
And he was really super excited about his subtitles, as was I.
Mm.
And so this is why this has been confusing for listeners, because then these are regular old subtitles. They weren't excited.
But still watch the show, because
But still
great.
Watch the show. The show is still brilliant,
amazing.
Regardless of where the subtitles are. But I would really genuinely like to know if there is a story behind that. A little drop in for you here. The plot thickens on Subgate as someone very helpfully sent me a screen grab of the US version of Shogun that they'd watched. And the subtitles are once again right near the middle of the screen. Well, maybe not quite near the middle, but a lot higher up. And you can very clearly see them in that very distinctive Star Wars style typeface that Justin Marks describes in the interview. So So it seems that I am not going insane and I am not making this up. And actually, that's kind of the way that I saw it. And it seems that in the UK, the version we're seeing on Disney Plus just has standard Disney auto-generated subtitles, and that the US are getting the proper version. Of course, in the US, it airs on Hulu. So I think Hulu get burned in sort of hard-coded subtitles. And we in the rest of the world who are watching it on Disney Plus get the sort of territory-specific auto-generated ones. Presumably it's for regionalization so that depending on what country you're in, whatever language you speak, it'll generate them in that language. So there is obviously a practical aspect to this, but I think that's the reason why we're in the US on Hulu. It's just hard-coded in English. I did send this two screen grabs to Justin Marks, the showrunner, so we could see how they appeared here in the UK, to which he responded with the word, yikes. So there you go. Not as the showrunner intended, but it's a very good show regardless, so don't let it put you off. And with that, I will finally stop banging on about subtitles.
Why were we, didn't someone pick you up on the whole English language, Portuguese language thing?
Well, no, they just pointed out that in the book,
yes,
which I knew already,
okay,
Blackthorne speaks Dutch, he speaks Portuguese, he speaks English, and I think he speaks something else as well. Okay. But that's, I knew that because, as I said...
I think what actually happened is that he has to stand corrected again.
No.
Yes.
When he's speaking to his crew in the ship, he's speaking Dutch. When he's slagging off the Japanese to their faces, like when he's at the beginning, when he's explaining to that bloke, you're an absolute twat, he's almost certainly speaking English. And then when he speaks to anyone else, it's Portuguese.
Oh, so he is speaking English. Well, you denied that he ever spoke English.
Well, he probably only one scene. And I'm only assuming because there was one scene where he basically says to one of the, you know, to the guy, basically pulls him out of the little prison thing. When he says to him, I piss on the guy, he pisses on him.
Yeah.
The guy pisses. No. You're thinking of the monk. He's speaking Portuguese to him.
Oh, okay.
It's when he speaks to the guy who pisses on him and he's basically calling him a bellend. I think it's likely he was doing that in English. But frankly, it could have been Dutch, it could have been Portuguese.
Why did the person who tweeted you about it, the way that was that tweet was written was like, I'm picking you up on it.
I think they were mentioning that he speaks, to be fair, if I'm going to pick up the person who picked up me, they said he's bilingual, he speaks four languages. Well, clearly that wouldn't be bilingual, would it? That'd be like quadrilingual.
So, you know.
No, multilingual.
Not. But yeah, multilingual. There we
go. That's what you're going.
He's a polyglot. But yeah, so he speaks four languages, which I did know, I think you'll find. So, yeah.
He's so, doubled down on the twattery.
I did.
At the end of
never
this,
doubt me.
What, at the end of this was turned out to be an epic segment.
Oh my god!
The main deduction is I was right all along.
Yes,
says James
were.
Dyer.
Yeah.
I mean, that could be the title of this podcast. Has anyone else watched anything?
Yes, I've been watching Constellation more and more.
Yes,
Constellation.
Boy-dee.
And it's a bit like you and your subtitles. Did you imagine that they were in a certain position on the screen, or were they actually on the screen? Constellation is full of things where every single character now, once you get into episodes 2, 3, and 4, is kind of like in a weird own separate reality, and I don't know what's going on. And then I thought, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to read the Empire review of this
show. Written by James. Right.
To kind of like, you know, ease me into what the fuck's going on and kind of like help explain to me what the fuck's going on. And I have to say, again, I hate to back up James on
that. What is
but
going on?
His review was very excellent. It was brilliantly written, obviously. It did help me because it made me calm down about the fact that I didn't know what the fuck was going on.
Why? Because he was really saying that no one understands it.
Well, no, he made this... Basically, he says that it's really, really complicated. You don't know what's going on. You just have to go with it. And then at a certain point in the series, it suddenly all becomes clear. It's pretty much... It's paraphrasing.
Broadly speaking. So, although I was slightly twattish about it and started talking about quantum superposition. But yes, that's the gist.
Yeah, of course you did, yeah. There is a key scene, isn't there, where what's his name from...
Yes. Mike Ehrmantraut.
What's the actor's name?
His name is Jonathan Banks.
Thank you, Jonathan Banks. He's explaining to the little kid all about quantum physics, which is a key scene in the whole thing because it makes you perceive things differently. He says that, you know, a thing could be one color, could be white, another thing could be black, it could be the same thing. And you only realize which it is when you actually look at it.
Yes, the observer effect.
Observer effect, thank you. So, anyway, all this was very helpful, yeah. But bottom line is, I absolutely love it. So I haven't even got to the bit yet where it explains what the fuck's going on. But it's basically Gravity meets Event Horizon meets The Leftovers meets Contact meets Alice in Wonderland meets Tenet and Inception.
Oh,
it's
quite
I should put that in the review. That's great.
It's quite Christopher Nolan-ian.
It is.
Don't you think?
Yeah, I mean...
From the way it's shot, to certain to the editing, yeah. to the fact that it goes all the backwards, forwards, sideways in time and everything. And I love that. You know, like there's no more kind of ambition you can have for a show.
I would say it's probably the most elliptical storytelling I've seen on television in yeah. a very long time, but I dug it.
But it's somehow very, very... I don't think it's slow at all, by the way. A lot of critics have said it is, and you kind of acknowledge that yeah. some people found it slow. Because I think it's so... cleverly compelling every single scene, and you always keep trying to work out exactly why all these people are doing these things, and what does it mean that people seem to have changed the colour of their car and all that kind of stuff. So it's completely gripping for me.
Mm. Yeah, does it ever get frustrating?
No, but I think maybe it helped to read the. That's why I read the review, because I was slightly frustrated. Article,
I mean, yeah. that's good advice.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
But I think for some people, I think there's a few people mentioned on Twitter that they were finding it, again, because it's quite opaque it isn't going anywhere soon. There's that sense of frustration. And I guess, you know, if you're genuinely wondering, is this ever going to make any sense? Because, like, if you're watching Twin Peaks of Return, the answer is, of course, no, yeah. it won't ever.
Yeah.
But with at least with this, there is
right exactly.
There's answers are coming.
There's answers are coming. Yeah. But I have seen that reviews have been quite divided. Like some people have, like American reviews have really disliked it, like taken against it. But I think it's really unfair. I mean, if you know, it's another example of like this is an incredibly ambitious. I'm not going to use the B word, but
huge
epic. All right, bold show.
It's bold.
It's bold.
But, okay, but this is the kind of thing you only get. Well, it's not only get, but you mainly now get on television because you can't like. So this is not a cheap thing.
No.
But this, it feels like this is the kind of film that was made once upon a time but gets made very infrequently now because it's expensive and not a lot of people go and see it.
Mm.
And Apple are just like, we're going to throw all this money at this thing and just whack it out there and they don't care. And I love them for it.
Yeah, same. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it looks amazing as well, of course, of course. The whole stuff on the ship with Mike Ehrmantraut.
Oh, all
fantastic.
Of the, yeah.
I love the ship stuff, ship-based stuff.
I know, but that feels like a different show, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And what I love about this, not only does it not attempt to distinguish between what's real and what's not, it doesn't attempt to distinguish what's future, what's past, what's present. They don't even do funky hairstyles to show you like what what you're looking at.
Exactly,
they just like
And there's no subtitles.
They don't explain it. There are no subtitles, whether in the frame or at the bottom.
Exactly.
I would definitely find this frustrating. I'm just telling you now.
Okay. Yeah. So, well, I'm loving that. Then there is I've finished Borders. Have you finished Borders?
No, I'm only on episode 3, I think.
Well, I mean, you know, I finished it, and I have to say, Daniel Lawrence Taylor has done a great job with that show because that's a really clever. It kind of like initially you think this is like quite a broad comedic satire on racism in this kind of all mostly white boarding school middle to upper class institution, but as it goes on, there's all kinds of stuff that's really interesting. Lots of different layers and lots of different ideas and issues that it tackles, but with a lightness of touch though. It's really interesting. It's really clever. I really enjoyed it.
And a great young cast. I'm
fantastic
really bowled over by them.
They're brilliant. Yeah, all of them. Fantastic. Yeah. So that's very good. I went to see the new Stephen Knight drama on Monday. This is it, you know, when I turn what I've watched into what I've done this week. But I did watch it as well. So the new Stephen Knight drama is called This Town. And he's been wanting to do this for years. It's about the music scene in the early 80s in the Midlands, in Birmingham and Coventry. And particularly like the kind of ska kind of scene, that kind of thing. And that's really interesting. Michelle Dockery's in it. And obviously can't say anything, heavily embargoed. but it was fascinating. Very interesting. Then finally, I want to mention, this could be in the What's Up, What Else Is On section.
What's up?
What's up? What else is up?
A new section.
Yeah, the What's Up section.
What's up, Doc? this could be in the Also Out section. I'm gonna single it out here. Because I said ages ago that on an episode of Michael McIntyre's The Wheel, which as we all know is one of the best things on TV, James.
Obsessed.
Russell T Davies is going to be on it.
Yeah.
So I knew he was going to be on it, and I spoke to him about it. I think, in fact, in our podcast interview with him late last year for Doctor Who, and he was like, yeah, that's not the kind of thing he normally does. He was quite, you know, quite nervous about it, because you have to do the whole, if you ever watched The Wheel, you obviously, James never watched it, you've watched The Wheel. You have to do a hand dance or dance.
You've got to do upper body dancing, around. James, you would love it.
Yeah, he said the whole experience was fascinating, because the way the studio works, it's completely like high-tech, you know, situation. Anyway,
what's his subject?
His subject is obviously Doctor Who.
Right.
So anyway,
there's so many categories he could have done. But,
oh yeah, but I mean, yeah, he's Doctor literally Who. One of the world's foremost experts on Doctor Who, so he might as well do Doctor Who.
Much like myself.
Exactly. Mm. But it's a really fun episode. So I've been watching that, and that is out on Saturday of the week we're doing. So Saturday, the whatever the hell it is of March.
Please be clear. Do you remember our listener who said, "Can you be clear? Can you say the date and the time?"
Yeah, Saturday, 9th of March, BBC One, 6:50 p.m. What have you been watching, Kay?
So I slowed down my viewing of One Day because I felt like I was approaching a juncture where I had to be in the right frame of mind.
You didn't want to cry in public. Is that what it was?
Oh my gosh, yeah. I'm. You know, some people are dainty criers. They're beautiful criers. They look, you know.
You're an ugly crier.
I am the worst crier. Ugly.
Just snot everywhere.
Oh, just snot, vein, forehead, everything, heaving, just like horrendous. A human puddle. Horrendous, right? Anyway, yeah, so I slowed down and then at the weekend just finished the whole thing and I was emotionally spent, but, you know, it was worth it because it's really good. So enjoyed that. And then have you finished it, James?
I have not picked it up again yet, but it is very close to next on my list.
Cool. Well, if you want a good cry, just crank it up because...
I mean, I'm kind of there already with the week I've had. So yeah, maybe
he's on the edge anyway, so watch it tonight.
Yeah.
And then The Dry, which is on ITVX. As you know, I'm a fan of it. It's the one with Roisin Gallagher. Basically, series two is coming on.
Ooh.
Yes. So I wanted to, I finished the rest of series one and I've watched series two, episode one, and it is just so good.
We may end up reviewing that again, so don't.
Well, listen.
Yeah, don't tell us what you thought,
no
Kay, because you know how much trouble I got into with Shogun. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that was an opus. That was ridiculous. That was, yeah. So, yes, that's what I've been watching, The Dry and One Day on Netflix.
Right, let us move on. Let us move on from what we've been watching to this week's listener question, which Kay may or may not have sent round and I didn't see. But Kay, tell us, what is this week's listener question?
This week's listener question comes from C-Dub, and they ask, what's the most off-brand for you show that you absolutely love, like Sci-Fi for You, / and then he's put inverted commas, silly for James, etc. So I'll go first. Because something that surprised me was when we watched the Doctor Who 60th anniversary episodes. I've never watched Doctor Who before. It's not my kind of show, I would ordinarily think. But I really liked the specials.
And crucially, this is a bit where I thought you were lying and actually called you out. And I was like, are you taking the piss? I refuse to accept that you liked
it. I want to lift the curtain here. I want to tell you something. So we recorded our episode, right? And I enjoyed it. I thought it was very fun and entertaining. I loved David Tennant in it and Catherine Tate. And then obviously we saw Shooty. And I really liked it. And I said so on the podcast. Then, and this is very unlike him, of course. No one can really, I bet you can't believe he would do this. I get a message from James. You didn't really like it, did you? And I was like, yeah, I really did. We actually spoke then. Or I think you phoned me on like video call. I was like, yeah, I did. Why? He goes, I just can't believe it. It's not the kind of show you'd like.
100%. No. I thought you were trolling me in some spectacular fashion. I couldn't conceive
a
world in which you enjoyed an episode of Doctor Who.
I know.
Because it wasn't even like, you know, the Shooty one or the Spice Girl one. It was the Star Beast one with the Meep. And I kind of thought, this is Kay's kryptonite. Like, I just don't understand.
It rocked his world. And so much so that, first of all, he thought I would like it just to troll him says a lot, right, about his psychology.
Oh, yeah.
And also that I couldn't possibly like it. But as I explained to him at the time, I like to try and be open-minded where I can.
Was it because with the Meep you felt seen?
Wow.
You know, world domination. That's
it. That's
feels very much like your thing.
I mean, the Meep was absolutely the psychotic villain.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Once again, he won't apologise for being wrong. He'll double down. But so that's the show that's very off-brand for me. But I watched the Christmas special and, yeah, just loved it.
Basically, you appreciate brilliantly written and made television. That's what James can't.
Yeah, and
you know,
I do try and watch things that aren't in my my lane. That I, sci-fi shows, stuff like that. Because
do you?
I do because you forced me to watch them.
That's true.
The only time that I've kicked off and I was in a foul mood as a consequence was the Foundation episode.
Yes, which you didn't finish.
I don't think I did know.
No,
because it went on for longer than an hour as well, didn't it?
I must admit, you do have like a Pomodoro timer, don't you? As soon as it hits 60 minutes, you're like, right, I'm out.
Yeah, how long did it go on for?
I have no idea.
Can you imagine
what
if we
call
made
it?
Pomodoro is a timer. Technique. It's like a, don't worry about it.
It involves tomatoes, don't worry about it.
Oh, right, you mean like the sauce, cooking the sauce?
No. There's a technique of getting stuff done. It's an efficiency thing and it's called the Pomodoro technique. It's
like, and you have like a timer, but it looks like a tomato. Anyway, we're digressing. It's nothing to do with tomatoes now.
So what was the conclusion? Oh, you're a bell end.
Okay, that's the conclusion.
So yeah, what about you, Boydo?
Well, this is difficult because obviously this is aimed at you two, really.
Because Boyd's wheelhouse encompasses all things.
Exactly.
The world is his wheelhouse.
Yeah, because I'm open-minded, mature,
but
and an appreciator of all kinds of
genres.
There
must be something that you've been surprised
by. Well, you suggested Selling Sunset, because which I do really like. I mainly like Selling Sunset for the house stuff, the ridiculous architecture and design of these epic houses in Hollywood Hills, wherever they are.
Inspiration for his next house purchase.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So the kind, and then actually some of the soapy kind of person stuff irritates me even in that. But I do like quite a lot of reality TV, which I've made that, you might not think I would. You think of some kind of bald, middle-aged James Dyer type
pomposity
snob, but I'm not. But there are some shows that I haven't watched much of. But you know what? I did realize one show that I started to watch because the Wolf and Owl podcast mentioned quite a lot. Can you guess which one?
Married at First Sight.
No, Ramesh. I've watched a bit of that anyway, and I can appreciate why that's so good. Married at First Sight Australia, which. New series starts, I think, next week, or may have started already, everyone says it's brilliant. I need to watch more of that. But Ramesh Ranganathan and Tom Davis on talk about this show that I'm about to mention. I watched some of literally because they talked about it on the show a couple of weeks ago. I thought, you know what? I've never watched that show. And I watched some of it. It's on Netflix, and I did. Entertaining. Below Deck.
Oh, yeah, they're always going on about
Below
that.
Below Deck. You know what, Below Deck?
A friend of mine has talked about it, but obviously the second she mentioned it and it sounded reality, I just kind of, my eyes glazed over and I stopped listening. Yeah. Is it a reality show? It is, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. What's it like?
It's a reality show, and there's the original Below Deck, there's those spin-off versions, Below Deck, Mediterranean.
Above decks, beside decks.
Exactly.
Mediterranean.
Above decks. Anyway, it's basically about the crew and the staff that run these yachts from, like a kind of meet from normal yachts for multi-millionaires.
Downton on the Waves. Upstairs, Below Deck.
Yeah.
Yes.
Contemporary Downton on the Waves. What a tough, difficult job it is to kind of manage these hugely expensive vessels and the extremely privileged, entitled rich people they're working for effectively. But it makes a little, because they're the kind of person that wants to, that thinks, oh yeah, do you know what? For a job, I'm going to go and work on a yacht young, often kind of like a bit similar to someone who might want to be on a holiday rep or something. It's a bit like that. Kind of like got flavors of lots of other different reality shows, but it's classic American reality as well. Like, it's very slickly edited and made and shot.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I did enjoy it. Yeah. I mean, I haven't watched tons more, I have to say, but I tried it out and I just clicked on a random episode. And it was very entertaining.
Again, open-minded.
Yeah. So that's the one.
What about you, James?
So it depends on. So in terms of stuff that people maybe wouldn't have necessarily thought, because bear in mind the question wasn't what did you like, it's what did you like sort of love, wasn't it? What were you obsessed with? I believe that was the question.
So let me go back to the original question.
What did you love?
What's the most off-brand for you show that you absolutely love?
Absolutely love. So it can't be something that, because I've liked quite a lot of shows that I would not have voluntarily watched. Yeah. But absolutely loved. So Normal People, which was my absolute show of the year in 2020, wasn't it? That one, for people who probably know me, it's not a huge surprise that I love that, because it actually is very much my wheelhouse. But
angst.
For me, a bit like those kind of like really kind of like poignant, sort of like emotionally powerful romance stories.
Answering the question at all.
No, but for people who don't necessarily know me, they might have been like, because I championed that to death. Like, it was my favourite show of the year.
I would see that as your show.
Fair enough. Then in which case, I would say Dominic Savage's I Am is probably a good example of this, because that is the kind of show that not only would I not, I would never in a million years have watched it, because, it's got Terry White written all over it. It's like, it's an entirely improvised, really grim kind of drama type thing. It's totally Terry, not me.
Deals with the working classes.
No, but it has a very gritty sort of verite feel to it, and some of it's really harrowing as well. And yet, I thought it was wonderful.
Actually, it's not particularly working class at all, is it? I am. It's quite.
When it begins.
What was the first?
So from the first series, you've got the Samantha Morton one, where she's struggling to make ends meet and has to turn to prostitution. You've got the one with Vicky McClure, where she's with the husband and that sort of.
Yeah, I'm thinking of Kate Winslet.
And the Gemma Chan one is less so, But it's, that show I thought was just an incredible bit of television, which I never would have encountered had it not been for this podcast. So I was very, very excited about that. But that dragged me kicking and screaming out of my comfort zone.
Question, have you left a review?
Have I left a review of the Pilot TV podcast? Yeah, 5 stars because I was forced to watch something that I ended up loving. But did you? So Doctor Who. That's a good example. If you genuinely loved it.
Oh my god!
You are such a
twat. You are such a twat.
Hey, did you say genuinely love or just like? I don't know.
Can I just say something? Right? I literally can't believe you just said that. You're such a moron. Can you?
The M word has come out.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but for him to actually look at me,
that was classic.
He didn't even smile when he said it. He goes, I mean, if you genuinely did like that.
That's classic.
Yeah. Why won't you believe what I'm saying to you? I don't know how much more clear I can make it.
I don't know. It still doesn't complete. I see your lips moving, but the sound I just hear is like,
you know what? It's because I didn't like Foundation. He can't get over it.
That's it.
Do you know what this is like? As if we've gone on a date, like, and it's a bad date, and someone can't accept it, that you just don't want to see them again. And they're like, oh, no, a different time? No, I just don't want to go out with you.
He's kind of stalking you, but stalking your opinion.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah,
he's
I'm going to stand
it.
Outside
no,
your house until you admit you did not love Doctor Who.
Yeah.
You didn't like Doctor Who, but you're going to give Foundation another
go. Stand there with like a banner.
Yeah, placard.
Because we've tried, like on Pilot Plus, I tried at least two episodes of Star Trek with you, didn't I? That is true.
Because Doctor Who's better.
Except it's not. But
this, do you know what this is? I don't mean to be glib, but it's a mental illness. You're an idiot. Oh God, what a clown.
Idiot and clown today, which is
no, but genuinely
good.
I feel like I've entered clown town.
Moron
clown.
Yeah.
No, apologies to Mrs. Dyer if you're listening, but I would say I have been provoked.
We've all been provoked.
You're on my mum's list, just so you know that.
I know,
you are
I know,
on her absolute
know,
shit list.
I know.
Does but your then, mum like Doctor
She's a massive fan. She's got like a TARDIS poster on her wall and everything. Yeah.
Does she ever tell you off though for being provocative?
For being provocative.
I know I'm on the shit.
You mean on the podcast?
Yeah.
In life in general.
No.
Kay, that girl who bullies you on the podcast. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
Does Boyd ever get mentioned to be on the shit list?
I don't think Boyd is on the shit list, actually. Thanks. I think you generally get a free pass.
Good to know.
Oh, as always.
Yeah. She's coming for you now, Boyd.
Unbelievable.
I think that was a question. We might have answered it. Yeah. We might not. Yeah. If you would like to have your questions sent in, please do send them to Kay on Twitter at Kay Ribeiro. Please do send them to @PilotTVBod on Twitter or Instagram. And we will attempt to address it. Oh, God. Right, it's time for news. Let's have some news.
Do you know what? I'm going to start with what we normally, I think, put at the end of news, because it's difficult always to navigate from a sad story to a death, a famous person.
You thought you'd start on a downer.
Well, except in this unique case, I'm talking about Richard Lewis.
Right.
Comedian, TV star, and I think particularly known in recent years for being on Curb Your Enthusiasm with Larry David. And of course, Larry and him were best friends from school. They were born in the same hospital.
Oh, wow.
They were best friends since they were kids. And I think it all starts at, like, went to summer camp together or something, and they hated each other, and then they grew to like each other when they became adults. But Richard Lewis was always at the heart of Curb, and was always like the best scenes in Curb right up until this final season. There's a really poignant scene that loads of people posted where they're playing golf together. He's arriving on a golf cart, and he talks about, Richard talks about what he's going to leave Larry in his will. He's going to leave loads of stuff. And Larry's like, no, I don't want you to leave stuff in your will. Don't leave stuff for me. And they have an argument about whether they're going to leave it or not. And it's like, no, I'm not going to accept it. I'm not going to accept it. It's brilliant. But also, as I've mentioned many times, that I interviewed Larry for this final season. And I found this quote. I was thinking, oh, he talked a little bit about Richard in Arsenal about it. And I said to him, there are some scenes with Richard Lewis this season that get even deeper into your friendship. Did it feel that way to you? And he said, in season 11, when we were at the political rally arguing about something idiotic and Tracy Ullman was sitting behind us, and I said to Richard, when are you going to die? That's what he says to him, when are you going to die? It's an incredible sequence. I mean, there's nobody else in the world I could have said that to. It just came out of the scene. And because we're so close and because we've known each other so long, it's the kind of friendship where you can say anything and not have to worry you're going to hurt the person's feelings. Isn't that brilliant?
Yeah.
So, just Richard Lewis, Larry talking about him, the whole thing. Brilliant. And there's probably other news as well.
So I've got some news. Game of Thrones star Staz Nair will front a new BBC crime drama called Verdi. It's been adapted from A.A. Dan's novels. The Rebel Moon actor said it was an honour to take on the role. So that's a bit of good news for any Game of Thrones fans.
What's it about, Kay?
It's basically following this detective who's disowned by his Sikh family when he marries a Muslim woman, and yeah, follows his journey.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's genuinely interesting. The BBC, that's BBC, right?
Yeah.
The BBC also put out today, as we're recording this today on Thursday, listeners, just go behind the veil, of a first picture of series two of one of the best dramas of a couple of years ago. Do you know which one I'm referring to? Can you guess? Can you guess? I mean, very much, can you guess what I'm talking about?
Wait, so today? It's one of the best shows that BBC has had on?
The last few years, yeah.
And what was the bit before that? You said?
This is series two. They put the first pictures out today. It's got very dominated by a main star performance, one of his best performances of his career. He's also part of James's favourite show.
Oh God! Come on, James.
Doctor Who?
No.
Great callback.
Martin Freeman.
Oh, Blue Lights.
Responder.
I thought you'd go with Breeders. Oh, we're rolling out all the hits here.
Breeders finished. Breeders is finished now. You can really, you can rest and rest.
That's true. Yeah, I can
in
rest.
The knowledge.
Hang on. Well, the Responder. Let's say the Responder. I didn't mind the Responder. I didn't.
No,
responder.
I know.
No, I was pointing out
you didn't like that he was from your least favourite show.
I would say none of this has worked really.
Let's keep it in.
Also because I said Blue Lights and he's not even in that.
Yeah, not Blue Lights.
Although the Responder, he's a policeman, so his car has a blue light on it. So you
thank
weren't actually
you.
That far
fact,
off.
The
you.
Shot that they've released, which I'm just showing to Kay now, listeners, which is the is blue,
oh,
very much
yes,
blue light based.
Very blue lit. Yeah,
so there you go.
Right, I was right, sort of. Yeah, in a James way. I was very
You were right in a James way.
So this was the Responder, and it was about the he's a cop working in, you know, the night shift in Liverpool. It was written by Tony Schumacher, who was brilliant, and it actually was a cop back in the day. And it also got Adelaide Adedayo in it, and Mayanna Buring, and Warren Brown, and they're all returning for series two. And I think it's very exciting because it was absolutely brilliant. As I said, it was one of the best shows of that whatever year it was, 2021, 2020, yeah, whichever.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Time has no meaning before the pandemic,
no,
and
exactly.
Indeed during it. So.
Exactly.
Pedro Pascal has confirmed The Last of Us season two is filming at the moment. So that's exciting. Kay, in particular, very excited about that.
He won an award, didn't he, for it?
He did win an award.
Which he wasn't, which was, he beat all the Succession people, basically.
And rightly so.
It was the SAG Awards.
Yes.
There you go. Just
good knowledge.
Yeah, thanks.
Beef. You see, the creator of Beef,
yes,
Lee Sung-jin, has said that he's hoping to cast Jake Gyllenhaal, yeah, Anne Hathaway, Charles Melton, and Kaylee Spaney in the second season of that show.
Yeah, wow.
I mean, I'm hoping to get Arnold Schwarzenegger, Tom Cruise, and Steven Spielberg on this podcast next week. Doesn't mean I'm going to.
Well, we've got Julianne Moore. And
that is true. She's doing quite well.
So, I mean, you know, we're
Larry and Seinfeld. Yeah. I mean, you've done pretty
so
well.
So, actually, yeah, we can't complain too much. But, yeah, it's just an oddly phrased news story. They're hoping, he's hoping to cast.
That is funny.
Okay. Yeah. I think it's an anthology. I think it's an anthology series. So there'll be a completely different set of feuding people.
Yes.
Any news on Feud, Boyd?
No, still not there. No, fucking furious still. There is a lineup for season three of Hacks. Did you see this? Which is quite star-studded, actually. Not quite star-studded, it's that. But confirmed stars in the new season of Hacks, which I loved the first two series, are Christina Hendricks from Mad Men, Christopher Lloyd from Back to the Future, George Wallace from Clean Slate, Tony Goldwyn from Scandal and Oppenheimer. They're all there joining, obviously, Jean Smart and Hannah Einbinder for series three of the absolutely fantastic Hacks.
I want you both to sit down and compose yourselves. Have you seen the news that Sara Ramirez is departing And Just Like That?
Yes. Oh my God, best
a nation,
ever.
A globe. In fact.
Oh my gosh. Listen,
punches the air.
Yeah. I mean, you know, hopefully better roles to come, etc.
Yeah, but no disrespect to Sara Ramirez personally.
Exactly.
But that role.
Oh
that
my
role.
God, heinous. Awful, awful role. Che, the stand-up comedian who was not funny.
R.I.P. Che.
Yeah. Speaking of casting stuff, Eugene Levy has joined Only Murders in the Building season four.
Yes.
Oh, that'd be great.
Very, very excited.
Yeah. Anything is elevated by a significant degree by the presence of Eugene Levy. I've got a question for you, Woody. You know, do you know anything about this X-Files reboot?
No.
Why didn't you ask me? Out of interest.
Okay. Do you know anything about the X-Files reboot?
No.
I know that you love the X-Files as much as you love Doctor Who. Yeah. So
when was this mooted?
Well, apparently this is a thing that's been an ongoing. So Ryan Coogler is rebooting the X-Files.
Now you mention it, it rings a bell. Yeah.
And it rang a bell with me, but I'd forgotten all about it because rebooting the X-Files seems like a mad thing. But apparently he's doing it, and Chris Carter has officially given his blessing. He did point out, though, it's not like they asked his permission because he doesn't own the IP.
Right.
So he couldn't stop them if he wanted to. But he said no, and he's got some good ideas. He's very happy he was doing
Fox
it.
Fox or whatever.
Yeah. Which is now Disney.
Right.
So, yeah.
That's interesting. Gillian Anderson feature in He this week.
It was very good, I have to say. I really enjoyed reading it. Yeah. A great commission by me.
Yeah.
What's she talking about, Boydie?
Well, no, it's just a piece about her rise and rise, really, because she's, you know, her career is kind of incredible. And she's in this scoop coming up on Netflix, which is a film, Netflix film, about the whole Prince Andrew, Emily Maitlis interview. And she plays Emily Maitlis. And from what I've seen, she's fucking incredible.
I can't wait to see it.
Obviously, I am starting to appreciate that Apple TV Plus is basically the home of elite sci-fi. We're getting to this point. Like, they have embraced the genre of elite sci-fi wholeheartedly. And there's another one on the horizon. It has been happening. So David Dasmalchian is now joining Alexander Skarsgård it's just called Murderbot, but it's based on the Murderbot Diaries, which is a series of books by Martha Wells. And that's been on my reading list for a very long time because it's apparently a really great science fiction series.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about something else. Which is, aren't they also doing the adaptation of the first cyberpunk novel?
What, William Gibson?
Yeah, William Gibson. Yeah, Necromancer. I think they're doing an adaptation of
Neuromancer.
That. Neuromancer. Yes. What did I call it?
You call it Necromancer.
Neuromancer.
Neuromancer, yeah.
Yeah, they're doing that.
I didn't
Apple
know that.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
so come on, Apple,
today.
With the elite sci-fi. Yeah. I'm here for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, anyway, so Murderbot Diaries is kind of cool. It's about a kind of self-hacking security robot who is terrified by human emotion despite its interest in vulnerable clients. That sounds really sinister. But anyway, it's about a robot that develops free will. The Murderbot Diaries. It's supposed to be very good. So yes, I'm excited that is coming.
Yeah, Apple orders Neuromancer series based on William Gibson's novel. That is actual news as well.
Yeah.
So yeah.
One last thing I did want to mention, because Guy Ritchie, we're going to be talking about in a little while, because he has, of course, done The Gentleman. But he is attached to direct, and he's also being an EP on The Donovans, which is like a spin-off loosely based on Showtime's Ray Donovan, the show
I
love. But it seems to be like Landon-based fixers.
Yeah.
So it's like The Donovans. So it is exactly what it sounds like. It's Guy Ritchie's Ray Donovan. So I guess they're like London slightly dodgy geezers. Fixing stuff out.
That is a weird one, isn't it? Yeah.
And like the official description is, while the family might be London's most elite fixers today, the nature of their business means there's no guarantee what's in store tomorrow, which tells you nothing, but...
And he is so prolific, isn't he? Like, he's done...
He's a busy man.
He's done, in recent years, if you like, go from like 2017, King Arthur, Aladdin, The Gentleman, the film in 2019, Wrath of Man, Operation Fortune, Ruse de Guerre, which was in the same year in 2021, then two more films in 2023, and now the TV series that we're about to review, and that project, it's incredible. He's really like, has he got a tax bill to pay or something? Oh, I don't know.
But some of the stuff he's been putting out, actually, I've got a lot of time for. Like, he's done some good stuff recently.
Spoiler alert.
Not everything has been great. But
he might not be talking
stuff.
About what we're...
Well, you don't know. Yeah. How am I talking about it? Who knows?
I hope so. Mm-hmm.
You don't know. Right, that's it for news. Before we move on to reviews, let's have this week's guests. And they are Mary and George director Oliver Hermanus and the Julianne Moore, Mary in said Mary and George. Boydie, you spoke to them.
What? I did.
What went down? How did it go?
I mean, I don't want to go over the top or anything, but Julianne Moore is like one of the most impressive people ever. So yeah, I mean, it was.
And you do a podcast with Kay,
by the way.
What? Yes, good point, James.
I do. That's true. Oliver's very lovely as well. He'd just flown in that morning. So, which she mentions on it. So, you know, he was like in a state of daze, but he was good fun. But she's just phenomenal. She's just fantastic, eloquent.
Is she beautiful in real life?
Oh, mate, looks incredible. Mm. Yeah, I mean, yeah, absolutely unbelievable. So yeah, it was another great.
We're on a roll. I say we're on a roll. You're on a roll, Boyd.
Yeah, Boyd is on a roll.
Very lucky. Yeah, very lucky.
Well, if that has got you salivating for Boydie's Mary and George interview, here is Boydie talking to Julianne Moore and Oliver Hermanus.
Oliver and Julianne, welcome to the Pilot TV podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. How are you enjoying London so far?
So far, so good. What a beautiful day it was yesterday. Yeah. But poor Oliver just arrived this morning, so he's barely conscious.
I've seen nothing of London.
So be kind.
Be gentle. Fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Unlike this show. I mean, this show is telling a kind of outrageous true story about your character, this woman who effectively pimps out her son to the king, right? And your character is fairly outrageous. Did you talk about, was the tone of the whole show? Because the tone of the whole show is funny, etc. Was that there in the script, or did the two of you talk about that?
It was very much in the script. Definitely. Right? I mean, there. Yeah. I think Dave's writing is outrageous and irreverent and modern. And I think when I spoke to Oliver, he was very much interested in elevating and continuing that tone. Yep. And so that was sort of the point of this.
Because right? When I read them, I laughed out loud a few times in the scripts that I was sent. So I wanted to make sure that the show is meant to be funny. Yeah. I mean, they're definitely gags.
Yes.
So we didn't want to take it down or weight it down with too much drama.
Did you, when you know, on your first day of filming, do you kind of gather everyone and do you talk about, you know, the tone you're going for and reflecting the script? How do you work?
Not. Okay.
There's any time, yeah.
You know, because for me personally, the directing job, it evolves as I start. You know, the actors are finding who these people are. They're like exercising the dialogue. They're moving through space and time. Like it takes a while for us all to kind of feel. And then it becomes quite, you know, natural. Like it becomes more immediate, I would say, as we go. So I don't like to prescribe too much at the very beginning, because even I'm sort of still going, what is this?
But Oliver's very much a leader and was very, very present and really available to everyone. And I think I felt like there was a cohesiveness to the way that you brought us together. And, you know, we felt like we were all in the same place. So he did communicate that.
And do you get the character from the start when you start? Do you remember, you know, your first day and what that was like kind of performing that character for the first time?
You kind of get the character, I think, upon reading something. I think if you don't, for me anyway, if I don't understand who that person is when I read the script, then I'm like, well, then I'm probably not the person for the job. You know, so right away, it's sort of like the character kind of rushes up to meet you. You know, she was very evident on the page.
And it was the fact that she is so outrageous. I mean, she's sweary. She hangs out in a brothel with Neve Algar.
Yeah.
You know, everything about her is kind of fascinating. I mean, that must have been such a juicy role for you. Did you immediately think, oh, this is going to be great?
It was fun. You know, I was saying to someone earlier, I felt like she was a character with nothing to lose. You know, she was someone who had very little, in a sense. She had no agency. She had no autonomy. She had no real power except through the men that she was married to and her male children. And so because of that, I felt like she thought, why not? Why not? I can be anything I want. No one's gonna care. And how further down could I go?
Yeah.
Did you read the original, the book, the nonfiction book on which it was based, and kind of do research into the time, or again, were you just sticking to the script?
I mean, I obviously got the scripts first, and then I went behind the scripts and met with the writer of the book and sort of like mined him a bit and read the book, his book. It's. The tone of the scripts are so specific that they're so very different from Benjamin Woolley's book. It doesn't really help to kind of consider both of them. You kind of have to stick to the one that you're in. You know, the very first day of shooting, I think, is a perfect example of that, because the very first scene that Julianne did, she had to bite somebody's lip. And I felt like that was like the perfect set.
Oh my gosh, that's right. Yes, that's right.
It's like a good, this is what the show is about. Like,
no, I invented the biting. The biting wasn't
that's
in
true.
There.
You
yeah,
did.
Yeah, I did the biting. Oh, right. Yeah.
And so like, okay, so he's going to walk across a room and the other actor was so nervous.
I was just supposed to, I think I was just supposed to kiss him and then I bit him.
Did you warn him in advance? Did you say, by the way, I'm going to bite you?
I mean, I didn't bite him hard. Sure. It was just a surprise, a little bit of a surprise.
And he loved it. But
well, of course.
But it's like, that was like a good kind of, like sort of like idea of where we were going. Like, this is what we're making. Yeah. And that was like a good, you know, opening act.
And this is I would describe it as a raunchy show. Like the sex and the sexuality and the fluidity of everyone is very much up front. Was that fun, I guess, to address all of that and to kind of be upfront about the sexual element of the whole thing?
I've always thought of the show as having a punk quality. Like from reading it, there was that sort of just front-footedness to it. You know, they're unapologetic. The attitude of the storytelling is unapologetic. You know, when things happen to Mary particularly, she doesn't sort of recoil. She just kind of pivots very quickly. And I think that's just the energy of what we were trying to get right, is that nothing really stops Mary.
Yeah.
Very little.
And did you think that was one of the most interesting things about it? It feels very modern, the sexuality of the characters, that you can't kind of pin it down. You can't necessarily label it. People just have flings and have relations with whoever they like.
Well, I think that's kind of life, right? You know, I mean, we all wouldn't be here if people didn't behave that way. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's that's just the truth of being a human being and how we relate to each other and how our interest in one another in terms of all different kinds of relationships, including sexual ones. And, you know, so I think that bringing that kind of, I think that was something, as Oliver said, that kind of punk quality or that alive quality to it was that the sexuality was a part of that.
Mm. There's kind of talk of, you know, debates in about, you know, whether Hollywood shies away from sex now, you know, particularly in films. But it strikes me that in this kind of show, and TV is much more open to dealing with that kind of stuff, whereas Hollywood might have shied away. Do you recognize that?
No.
No, I don't think so. Mm-mm. I mean, yeah. I feel like, you know, with what we've done with this, in terms of the sex and how we portray the nature of these characters, we are aware that we're making this show for people in 2024, and so we feel like it's current in that way. And maybe it's naive of us to assume that in the court of James I, what the history books tell us isn't the whole story of what people got up to in the middle of the night. And I think that's just kind of where we sit. We sit in this assumption that they were probably having more fun than we remember.
Yes, definitely having a lot of fun. Yeah. And in terms of Mary, like, she's obviously incredibly manipulative and all of that. But I think actually we're rooting for her as well along the way. Was that something that, you know, you kind of, that was there in the script, or did you kind of bring that to it in a way?
It's so funny. It made me think, like, I want to really examine the word manipulative and think, like, does that mean that it's overt or covert? Do you know? Because I don't think there's anything covert about what yeah. Mary does. I think there's something very very direct. So I never find that she is, like, you know, arranging things in a way that, you know, in a secretive kind of way. She's just going after what she wants. I mean, even her first meeting with James happens because she's been promised that she would meet the king, and he doesn't come out of his room. So she just gets up in the middle of the night and goes looking for him. Yeah. You know, so there's something almost childlike about Mary and her directness, you know, and her lack of understanding about the way that she's supposed to behave, you know. So I don't think about her, I don't think of her being manipulative. I think about her being active.
And I think, you know, there are scenes like where there's the dinner scene with Nicola Walker.
Oh, I love Nicola Walker.
Oh my God, how brilliant is she? Did you know her before?
No, and I just, I love her. I loved working with her. The very first date was very challenging because we were at a long table and she was all the way at the other end. And all I wanted to do was talk to her. So I kept, every time I exited, I would kind of rush to the end so I could go, like, grab a few words with her. I just adore her.
She's phenomenal. Okay. Yeah, she's a hero.
We're so happy that she wanted to do this with us.
Yeah. But I was thinking in that scene, I'm like, oh my God, I want you to, you know, to kind of fight back, and because you're kind of traduced in that scene.
Right. I think it's sort of astonishing too. Mary suddenly seemed, well, what's interesting about Nicola's character is that she's someone who has, she has agency because she has her own money.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, so suddenly here's somebody who really has power, and that's what Mary wants.
Oliver, when you're kind of getting together to work on a show like this, and you've worked with incredible people, Bill Nye, I'm thinking of in Living, that brilliant film. Do you get daunted of working with someone like Julianne, or do you just kind of like,
daunted?
Of course you are. I mean, like, even that day where Nicola came for the first time, and I mean, this is a perfect example of breaking the historical rules. I put the two women at the two ends of the table, and the men are in the middle, because these are the two adversaries, right? And I'm equally as, you know, nervous about Nicola having a great time and enjoying, because what I knew about Nicola before she started this was that she doesn't like period dramas, but she responded to the material. And so I'm like, here I am in the middle with Julianne Moore, Nicola Walker at the ends of each table, and of course you hope that the environment you're creating and the other actors is going to be fulfilling to them, because they're actors working at the top of their game.
Yeah, this is not like your normal period drama, though, is it? I mean, I'm sure Nicola saw that as soon as she read the script.
I mean, you know, it's the ask. I feel like every actor who I approach to be in this, we, like, you know, Simon Russell Beale particularly, I was like, do you want to play a dead
awesome.
Guy?
Yeah, he was so fun. Yeah.
So I just kind of went through like my fantasy list of actors who, especially here in the UK, who I would just love to work with. And thankfully, even as far as Trine Dreholm from Denmark, who I was a huge fan of. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like we just got very lucky that everyone came to our party. But anyway, to answer your question, yes, I was very nervous to work with Julianne.
I mean, if you've worked with every great director there is, Spielberg.
Okay, stop it.
Paul Thomas Anderson, David Cronenberg, Todd Haynes, of course. Yeah. How does Oliver compare?
You can't ask that question.
Amazing. So amazing. Like, as I was saying earlier, he was very much a leader, you know? And I think it's so challenging, particularly in something of this size, with so many actors and so many episodes. And so how do you establish that? How do you establish tone? How do you make yourself available to everyone? How are you able to kind of marshal your crew and your actors? This is hard at the same time. Like, how do you navigate that and generously and graciously and authoritatively? And he was able to do all of that very easily and very pleasantly. It's true. You were. Thank you.
And when you're going to work with a director, Oliver, do you watch his stuff? Did you kind of get up to speed?
We had met before because I'd seen Living and really, really admired it. And so, and it was before the movie came out. I think someone sent me a link. And so we actually had a Zoom call about just working together in general. So when this came up and he was attached to it, it was very interesting and exciting for me.
And do you, you know, if I was, I might do a kind of quick, you know, look back at Julianne's greatest hits or something
in the build up. I love it.
Did I do that before working with her?
Yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of what Julianne's done is very imprinted in my mind. I didn't have to go back very specifically. And I think we, even sometimes when we had downtime, I would boyishly, nerdishly ask her about certain things that she's done in her career just so I could get it from,
You know. What was the one thing you wanted to know when?
What was the one thing you wanted to know? I don't remember.
I mean, we spoke about Magnolia, and I definitely wanted to know a lot about that. But I mean, you know, our director of photography, his first day, he was so nervous because his favorite film was Safe. And it's like it defined him. And so, I mean, even Rocky Horror, Little Shop of Horrors.
No, I'm not allowed. What do you mean? Do you mean Big Lebowski?
No, I mean
Little Shop of Horrors.
No, Little Shop of Horrors. The Hand That Rocks the Cradle.
Oh, the Hand That Rocks the Cradle.
All these like phrases. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, Hand That Rocks the Cradle was.
The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. Gosh, it was in The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. Little Shop of Horrors.
Little Shop of Horrors.
Similar names.
Yeah.
But no, it's those kinds of things. I don't know. I don't. They can stress you out too.
I think it's great that, I mean, I think one of the wonderful things about the kind of work that we do are how many people we encounter and get to work with and how it humanizes experiences that we've had, like in the cinema or on television, because suddenly there's that person who created that work. And it frees you in a sense, you know, you just realize that they're people who made this. It's exciting.
Are there any directors that you haven't worked with that you'd still like to work with? Like anyone come to mind?
Oh my God. Like, so many. Jane Campion, I think. The Safdie brothers, although they just split up. I think Scorsese would be great. I mean, there's so many.
And I'm interviewing you right now in the middle of the Oscars are coming up soon. I think I speak for everyone when I say that May-December should have got way more attention. Does that kind of thing bother you? Does it affect you in any way, or you're just happy to have made such a fantastic film?
We're so proud of that movie, and this is my fifth movie with Todd Haynes. He's just been, I mean, I can't believe that I've had the creative partnership that I've had with him, that he's chosen me so many times. So I'm so grateful for that. And working with Natalie and Charles was really remarkable. So I think that, I don't know, I think we feel like we all had a very special experience. And so that in itself is a great reward.
Well, I think this time next year, I'm sure this will be nominated for Emmys, etc. So, you know, I'm sure. Is that kind of thing important to you to get that award recognition?
It's all he cares about.
Yeah, right. Stuff, but,
I mean, I didn't even realize how it all works. No, honestly, no.
That's a mature response, yeah.
I think in my mind, honestly, which is really funny, I think about the Cannes Film Festival and the Venice Film Festival, because that's where I started. Right. Like, those were the two spaces that just gave me a career. So that's where I peg my awards mentality.
Well, thank you so much. Congratulations on a fantastic show. Thank you.
Nice to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Time for reviews, and we will begin, in fact, with Mary and George, who are in league. Then it's Extraordinary, and last we have The Gentleman. And if you're surprised to find a reference to the film that ended the careers of both director Stephen Norrington and Sean Connery on this podcast, then let me tell you, you are not the only ones. Anyway, Mary and George is, as you have heard, a historical drama based on Benjamin Woolley's book, The King's Assassin, which is in itself based upon the affair between King James VI and George Villiers, the Duke of Buckingham, an affair facilitated by the Duke's mother, Countess Mary. Kay, Boyd is horribly compromised, as we have already discussed, but we can count on you to pick this up for us.
So this is basically a very lavish, sexy, thoroughly entertaining period romp. Julianne Moore, as James said, plays Mary Villiers, who is, when we first see her, I really like the first scene, which I think is really striking, because she is giving birth to her second son, George, who, as she says, is going to amount to nothing because obviously it's all about the firstborn. And, you know, in this scene, she's just given birth. She refuses to have the umbilical cord cut. And then a few seconds later, it cuts to said son, George, as he's older, with a cord around his neck as he's trying to take his own life. And she's just standing there, kind of like doing nothing, because she sort of knows it's a cry for help, but just reiterates to him, he has to make something of his life. He has to, what her plan is for him, she wants him to go to France. She wants him to get in, sort of be elevated socially, learn, you know, how to dance and how to talk to the, you know, aristocracy, and to forget about his like love he has for this young servant girl, and to make his fortune because she needs him to. And I think she's just brilliant in this role, because she just completely relishes this awful side of this character, who I think in anyone's hands could be very two-dimensional, but because of the script and the writing, and, you know, and her performance, she's so much more than that, because there's such depth to this character, in that we see that, you know, because we learn basically in this first episode, we see her backstory, and we see that she's been treated really cruelly by her husband. But yeah, Julianne Moore just seems like she's having a whale of a time. And Nicholas is really great in this as well, as this guy who just wants to sort of like be loved and impress his mother, and just kind of wants to be left alone. He wants to stay in England, but he's forced to go away. And then he does just embrace it completely. And when we see he goes to France, you know, he starts to live this very debauched life. He's being mentored in how to do all these things, like dancing, and but also in the ways of being morally loose and just enjoying himself sexually, shall we say. There's a lot.
Morally loose? Well, judgmental.
Don't you go slut-shaming him, Kay.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, he should be able to positivity. Dick around. Yeah, I don't know why I said that. Okay, yeah. No. As in, free with his love.
Free with his love, yes. And indeed his genitals.
Yeah,
sexually
exactly.
Fluid as That's well, it. I think I'd call him. There's a lot of fluid sexuality in this series.
I mean, to be fair, when he arrives at his new home in France, there is wall-to-wall fornicating going on.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I mean, there's literally, and there is a gag made of it.
Yeah.
What I love about this is the cracking script. I just think the dialogue is so zingy. Like, and particularly Moore gets some of the great lines, like, what's a couple of them? If I was a man who looked like you, I'd rule the fucking planet. Also, she says at one point, when he doesn't want to leave to go to France, she basically says, look, if you fail this chance, you'll fail us all and live like your father, smeared in unwashable excrement of eternal shame. Bon voyage. I was like, what a great like last parting note from your mother. But yeah, she is... she's uncompromising in the fact that he must go and earn his fortune and to support the whole family. And that includes trying to shag the king.
Yeah, this is just, it's a romp. It's an absolute romp. And I think the great thing about it is it's the whole tone of it is like, it's basically like a kind of bawdy comedy based on this nonfiction book by Benjamin Woolley, as you said. And I think what they've done brilliantly is they've kind of, so once I watched the first episode, I thought, you've got to kind of read more about it. And it seems fairly clear, historically accurate, that even though the king, King James VI of Scotland and the first of England, of course, was married and seemingly happily married to Queen Anne of Denmark, who is in the show, played by Trine Dearholm, I think that's how you pronounce it, he was also had this whole gaggle of young, hot male courtiers who he shagged, as you put it, regularly. And he had his favourites and blah, 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 among that group. And it was publicly known. It was kind of like he flaunted it almost to the court and to the public. And like everyone just kind of like dealt with it, even though at the same time, homosexuality was illegal, you know, and completely frowned upon. And, you know, you could be sentenced to death.
Except if you're the king.
But yeah, but that's the interesting thing about it is, but if you're the king, you can do what the fuck you want. And so it's like a really interesting insight, I think. And I think it takes that idea that this guy, because people believed in that the king was the ultimate, you know, and they actually, unlike now where we can be, you know, laugh and joke about how ridiculous royalty is, it wasn't, you know, that back then everyone believed that they had to.
Well, the king was anointed by God. That was what they believed.
That's the phrase I'm looking for. Thank you. So he could just do what the fuck he wanted to. And so you've got, and everyone kind of dealt with that reality in their own way, in a way, like the people actually knew him. And I think Mary Villiers took that knowledge that she knew the king had this kind of gaggle of and had favourite male attractive men that he had affairs with and sometimes and fell in love with, etc. And decided, well, I've got a really good looking, handsome, hot son. I'm going to pimp him out to the fucking king. Mm. And she did. And again, this is all factually accurate. Not, I don't think any of that is factually challenged by any historians. I think what he does, what DC Moore, the scriptwriter, has done is he's taken those salient click facts, which is a brilliant story anyway, the fact that the mother is pimping out the son and the son goes along with it, happens to go along with it, I think, pretty much, and shows us other stuff as well. So, like, everyone's sexually fluid. All the main characters are sexually fluid. I'm no spoilers. So I've seen the first three episodes, by the way, and because I didn't take notes on what happens in each specific episode, a lot of this stuff you may not have seen yet if you've only seen the first episode. And I'm trying not to spoil it at the same time. But there's loads of a kind of amazing stuff that happens that you're like that is quite surprising on top of the incredible central core story that we have just explained. So it's relentlessly funny. As you said, the dialogue is brilliant. It's very sweary. There's effing and jeffing.
Oh my God,
C-wording,
so
left, right and centre.
There's a lot of that this week.
Yeah, exactly. But I think, and you know, there have been the favourite, you know, was like, you know, there's now a tradition, I think, isn't there, of period pieces that fly in the face of what you expect period pieces to be.
Although this doesn't have quite the kind of stylistic flourish that you're thinking of, which is the what's it called?
Yeah.
It's not the favourite.
Nicholas Holt one.
I know
what
you're talking about.
Yeah, Pippin the Great.
The Great.
The Great.
The Great. Yeah. It's just called The Great.
The Great. But I think this is better than The Great. I enjoyed The Great. Don't get me wrong, I haven't finished it. I think there's like three seasons now. But I think this is like, because it is a limited series, it's a limited story. I just think this is really well honed. Like, and every scene is working really well.
It's well-paced as well.
Very well-paced, pulling the rug from under you frequently, particularly in the brothel scenes, is all I mentioned when she starts hanging out with the brothel. And there's a dinner scene. I think it might not be in episode 2 or 3 where Nicola Walker pops up. Have you seen Nicola Walker in it yet?
Oh, I love her.
Oh, my God.
As Lady Hatton.
Lady Hatton. And that scene, because Nicola Walker is imperious and treats Julianne Moore like a piece of shit, basically. we discussed it in the interview. She talks about how brilliant Nicola Walker was, quite rightly. But Nicola Walker takes this little cameo and like absolutely just kicks it out of the park. Is that the phrase?
Knocks it out of the park.
Yeah. Thank you.
She may also kick it out of the park.
She
doesn't even need a bat.
No,
she just kicks it out of the park. Yeah.
So there's stuff like that that is just brilliant. And I think the casting, by the way, is fantastic. So Tony Curran, who played, I think people might recognise, he played Vincent Van Doctor Who, Kay's
favourite TV show.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Thank you. He's fantastic. Oh, as the king, who is happily married and yet obsessed with these young men at the same time. Neve Algar pops up as she's the brothel madam, who's fantastic. I think only from episode 2 onwards, probably, because Kay's looking like she hasn't seen it yet. Yeah.
Stop. You keep on like teasing the brothel. I haven't seen it.
Sean Gilder might even steal the whole thing as like prospective husband number 2.
He's great.
Of Mary Villiers. He's so funny. He's like
Sir Thomas Compton.
Yeah, he's so sardonic and grumpy about everything. He's really funny. And just I just think the whole thing is brilliantly done, incredibly entertaining, sexy, funny, and just a breath of fresh air. I thought it was fantastic.
A lavish, sexy, entertaining period romp.
It is all of those things, yeah. It's great, but it's as you say, it's like it's really well written. It's got a great cast. I really, really liked it, and I thought it was really good. But it didn't seize me.
Really?
I was not seized. Oh. I remained unseized.
I was entirely seized.
Well, I think you need to be seized.
I think I need to be seized. Like it didn't sort of capture me in such a way that I was like, I must watch the next one.
There are no spaceships.
There were, it has to be said, no spaceships.
Well, you haven't seen it in episode 3, though, have you?
There could have been. I've heard that there are spaceships in the brothel episode, so that's true. But yeah, it is. I mean, it's very well done.
Space brothel.
Yeah, the space brothel, yes.
Space balls from Mel Brooks, but maybe.
Wow.
Anyway.
Wow. Okay, Mary and George, which comes when and where, Boydie?
Sky Atlantic / Now. Today, oh no, tomorrow, sorry, Tuesday, 9 p.m. And all it'll all drop as a box set tomorrow as well, Tuesday.
Okay, the entire Space Brothel in one
date?
Go.
Tuesday the 5th of March.
Good.
Next up this week, we have Extraordinary, which returns for more superpowered fun from Emma Moran, as Jen, played by Mairead Tyers, continues to investigate why she's the only normie in a world of superhumans, all the while exploring a new romantic relationship with her cat, Jizzlord. Kay!
Yes.
How extraordinary did you find this?
I continue to really love this show. So when it first came out, I just found it so fresh and original. And it continues to, you know, it continues to do everything I loved about it. That it's very funny and it's very character driven. And those characters are really fascinating and interesting. So the premise is basically this is set in a world where everyone has a superpower and generally they receive it when they turn 18. However, Jen does not have one for some reason. She doesn't know why. The whole of the first series is her searching it, trying to figure it out, being quite down about not having it because her flatmates have them and she doesn't. So as series two picks up, she finally has got enough money to go to a clinic. There's a special clinic, a powers clinic, where you can go if you don't have your power or you're having issues with it to try and see what's going on. So she finally has the enough money to go there and she meets her counsellor, played by the Mighty Boosh's Julian Barrett, who tries to find out what's going on with her. But first, in order to for her to find out, they need to take a deep dive into her mind and that all plays out. Also, as you said, she's in a relationship with Jizzlord, aka Luke Rollison. What a great name.
He's amazing.
He's really good in this.
And has the best hair on television.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the first series, he spent most of his time as a cat because that's his power. But this season, he's mostly in human form. But there's a problem because his human past catches up with him. So that's going to cause issues to their relationship. And then also Jen's flatmates split up. And so it's about them dealing with the fallout from that. I just think, do you know what? If you like series one, if you haven't seen series one, I would recommend it because it does feel truly like something original, which is quite hard to do these days. Finds a different...
Currently on ITVX, series one.
Good fact.
Yeah.
And if you did, if you've already seen it and you liked it, you're just getting more of the same because it's just as funny as it was before and still inventive. So yeah.
I mean, it's wonderful, isn't it? It really is.
It's so good.
This was so funny because like when this first came out, I kind of, again, I had my solicitude, right, it's a straight to Disney Plus comedy thing. It's going to be awful. It's just so well written and so well acted, brilliantly cast. As you say, Luke Rollison as Jizzlord, never not funny, is great. Bilal Hasner, who we saw, was it last week?
Yes.
He's Dead really, really good in this as Cash, yes. And Mairead Tyers, who's just incredibly funny in this role. It's delightful. I think I watched three episodes of this.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, and I'm loving it. And exactly as you say, it's setting up this drama between Jizzlord's human life and his life now. And, you know, it's not a spoiler to say someone from his past comes back and they are dreadful. And it's just, and the encounter between Jen and that person is quite an extraordinary scene. It's loads and loads of fun. I really, really, really enjoy the show. It is great. Watch season one. Isn't that right, Boydie?
Yeah, did you say straight to Disney Plus?
Yeah,
is that what you said?
I know, he did
I mean,
say
that's
that.
A weird, slightly weird way
of
saying
it.
It's commissioned by
like,
Disney Plus.
Well, no, yeah, but that's
dismissive
why
of it.
You're right. Straight to Disney Plus seems like a weird turn of phrase. Like straight to video. Yeah. No, yeah, it's commissioned by Disney Plus. Yeah. I think it's like as an original piece of comedy.
Right.
And when any streaming network says the terms original comedy, I'm always braced for like,
you
impact.
Are, of course. Yeah. As a comedy hater.
Yeah. When an original comedy, you think, oh, God, here we go.
I mean, to be fair to you, it was a surprise.
Stop being fair to him.
I know. And I'm trying
What's
not
the matter
to.
With you today?
I don't know.
He's on some flex where he's just taking the piss out of your episode, and now you're being too
Sorry.
Quantum.
But it was a surprise just how good it was, I think. That's absolutely true. Do you remember the first scene, of course, one of the great opening scenes where she goes to the job interview in the first episode? That was set the scene so well. It was so brilliantly written and performed.
That first scene blew me away.
Yeah, and to then kind of keep up that level of wit. And just the dialogue's got that. She does that. It's one of the hardest things, I think, is to do comedy dialogue. And I would mention Dick Turpin at this point. I was kind of thinking of, you know, when I was reviewing Dick Turpin, I was talking about how...
On Pilot Plus, so for people who don't subscribe, you won't have heard this, but yes. Boydie was not a fan of the totally made-up adventures
made up
of
Dick Turpin.
Or completely made up, one of the two.
Yeah, I found it quite irritating, the tone of that show. And because... And I think it's, you know, comparisons are invidious, etc., but they're both comedies. But what this does is, it's the dialogue is full of funny stuff, character-driven, but it's still the dialogue is funny. And her answers in that job interview scene, that first scene, are funny, and the woman she's dealing with is funny, but they're also believable.
Yes.
And plausible.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the real sweet spot in TV comedy, generally, is, and I go, you know, I'm go back, even back to Seinfeld, you know, the genius of Seinfeld was, of course, it's an American Heart 22, 3-minute sitcom, but actually believe they talk like that, and you know, George and Jerry, etc. And similarly with this, the four main characters, you totally believe their interrelationships, you totally believe, like Bill Al-Hasna, who said he was in Dead Hot, is really funny because his girlfriend split up with him, and him trying to deal with that, their interaction of surrounding that, trying to be kind of adult and mature about it, is really, is just hilarious. And yet it's actually believable as well.
She's
totally
one of my favourite. I like her a lot. Carrie, played by Sophia Oxenham.
They're all great. They're all really brilliantly cast. So the dialogue's funny yet plausible. The situation is obviously set in a world of superpowers, but because it is done in this kind of throwaway almost way, you completely buy into that whole idea. So, you know, again, to compare it to Dick Turpin, you just don't believe that those characters would say any of that stuff, and the way they're saying it is exaggerated. Whereas in this, it's naturalistic, but it's really funny at the same time. And that's such a hard thing to pull off, and she does a brilliant job of it, Emma Moran. Totally fantastic piece of work. As you say, it was also very addictive. You want to watch more and more and more of it. So yeah, it's just, she's done it for season two. It's fantastic.
It is indeed extraordinary. And that lands on Disney Plus when?
Wednesday, the 6th of March, 2024.
That's very specific, Boydy. The listeners will be very pleased.
Yeah. Good.
Finally this week, we have The Gentlemen. And this is a show directed by Guy Ritchie, based on the 2019 film directed by Guy Ritchie, where we see recently anointed gentry Theo James inherit his father's estate alongside the secret weed lab buried below the acreage of his estate and his fuckwit brother's sizable debts. Boydy, I've got to confess. So I've never actually seen the film. I've never seen The Gentleman. So what I want to know from you, first and foremost, is can you tell me how this fits in? Like, is it a sequel? Is it a reboot? What is it? Do be a gentleman and explain.
It's completely different characters. So it's a bit weird. It's basically like, it's one of those things where he's taken some kind of theme, an idea of a world of the film that he's made and created a TV series with a similar tone and with similar subject matter, but they're completely different characters kind of thing. So it's a bit...
Because it has that, it's very much a comedy, an action comedy.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. And tonally, they're very similar, I'd say. Yeah. I was slightly dreading this because, I mean, I didn't mind the film. The film was fine.
I haven't seen it, but it's not generally well regarded.
No, I thought it was very standard. You know, like Guy Ritchie's got such a aura of, do you know what I mean? Like, you just think of certain things, don't you, with Guy Ritchie? Madonna, just like blokey movies with a lot of boxing and men.
Yeah. And Vinnie Jones is in this.
Men swearing and being gangsters, and committing crimes and being violent, and laddish kind of dialogue, laddish kind of dialogue. It's just a whole, and even like down to costumes, like a lot of like country aware attire, you know.
Tweed and flat caps.
A lot of tweed.
Flat caps.
Jodhpurs.
Bring, you know, all of that. And this, right, is all of that and more. Like, it's one of the most Ritchie of all Guy Ritchie things.
And superlative use of the C-bomb.
Loads of swearing, loads of seeing, effing and jeffing. Balboa. Tons of Balboa jackets. Everyone's wearing
a fucking Balboa jacket. That
is true. Or three, you know. It's even hilarious. It's like, and you see pictures of Guy Ritchie, and that's it. That is him. This is his life. It's like, what he does is, he takes like him and his mates, you know, their real life, living in country houses, going shooting, wearing Balboa jackets, and somehow turns into entertainment, you know, whether it's film or TV. But...
they say right about what you know, by the way.
Absolutely right about what you know. Again and again and again and again. In fact, in the case of Guy Ritchie. But do you know what? As I watched this thing, first of all, I was like, no, it still is irritating me. There's so much Barbara going on. It's just annoying. But as it goes on, I absolutely started to enjoy it. And I think it was like, once the premise had been established, and what happens is Theo James is working in the military somewhere, and he's called off because his father's died, played by the legendary Edward Fox. And and his brother, his kind of no good coke addict brother, who's living in the massive country pile that the family owned. And he, the dead father, leaves this whole thing to Theo James's character, the young brother, rather than Daniel Ings' character, yeah. Freddie, the older brother. And Daniel Ings, by the way, is a specialist in playing Belen, isn't he?
Oh, he's so good. Oh my God.
The Billy Piper show, yeah. where he was her yeah. fucking useless husband.
He gives the most extraordinary Belen.
And in this,
he is a fuck up, an absolute yeah. A-grade fuck up. And totally. I also enjoy the fact, so he plays Freddie and Theo James plays Eddie.
Yeah.
But Eddie is obviously short for Edward, except they call him Edwina.
Yeah.
And then yes. Freddie, Fredwood. They call Fredwood.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you've also got, so you've got those two, and Daniel Ings is hilarious as this monstrous fucking
he's
twat.
So
he's
good.
So funny. You've also got Peter Serafinowicz acting his arse off.
As a scouse gangster. Scouse.
Now, to be fair to the Serafinowiczes, I do know this, they are Liverpudlian.
Is he?
Yeah.
They you never are. Know that.
Absolutely. James Serafinowicz, his brother, who's a TV producer, etc., is a solid Liverpool fan. I don't think Peter's that obsessed with Liverpool. But so he's doing this very heavy Scouse accent, yeah. but that is their background, I do believe. But he's really funny as this horrific lunatic kind of gangster figure. Best bit of casting, though, Kaya Scodelario, yeah. who I've always loved, going back to Skins back yeah. in the day. And she plays Susie Glass, this who's like, basically, it turns out that underneath this huge, massive country pile, there's been this huge operation to make a massive amount of marijuana. And she's head of that, kind of, was head of that whole business, basically. And so this, and is very quite powerful. And it's basically running the UK's, most of the UK's yeah. dope business. And it's just... It's an entertaining premise. The characters are genuinely funny. And it goes to quite what it ends with. I'm not won't spoil it.
No, let's just don't
say,
spoil it.
But let's just say the chicken costume thing. And it's wild.
It's
and
extraordinary,
it
goes, yeah.
And I almost feel like it was a bit much. I was like, oh, come on, stop it now. But yeah, it was one of those things where, because it goes on so long and it's so extreme that it is funny.
I think it's just the right length.
Yeah, you're probably right. You know, the other thing I noticed about it, by the way, Ray Winston's in it, but not yet, not in episode one. Yeah. He plays Kaya Scodelario's character's father, so I'm looking forward to seeing him in it. Max Beasley's in it. Of course he would be, you know, why wouldn't he be? but you know, I noticed weird things about this show. I really enjoyed it, basically. It is funny. It's really funny. It's co-written with Matthew Reed. Guy Ritchie co-wrote the script with Matthew E. And it looks great. It's very nicely directed, such very cinematic. It's much better than the film, much funnier than the film. But what I kept noticing, once you notice it, right, I couldn't
stop. Oh, don't tell me. I don't know.
No. Oh, okay. Every scene, pretty much, it's like a lot of them is just chats in the house or in the different venues. Everyone's drinking something. Whether it's tea, coffee, wine, champagne, they've all got drinking.
They're very well hydrated by the end of this episode.
Well, it's important.
And the reason I noticed it was because there's one scene where Theo James's character, Eddie, has a long chat with Kaya Scodelario, Susie, over tea. And there's a whole bit about, do you want tea? I'm going to make tea. She's making tea. And then they cut to the next scene and he's having more tea in a different location with a different character. And there's another whole tea with beautiful chinaware. Oh, well, and I noticed the chinaware for start.
Can I remind you, you also drink a lot of tea.
So I do drink a lot of tea.
With Giancarlo Esposito.
Yeah.
Gus Fring.
Gus Fring's in it. And then he has a whole wine obsession. So there's this whole wine pouring thing. The wine pouring,
is very elaborate.
Very elaborate and bonkers.
I imagine if James were to drink wine, that's how he would drink it. Actually, we need Paul the wine guy
totally.
To get in touch and let us know if it's actually a thing.
Paul the wine guy, but it's really enjoyable. And I was genuinely surprised by how much I enjoyed it.
Wholeheartedly agree with Boyd. I really enjoy this. So much so that Boyd gets to look at me. I was just chortling in the office. Yeah, I was cackling a lot. I mean, there's so many funny bits. I think a lot of it is down to Daniel Ings. He's so funny in this role and well cast. And particularly Boyd referenced the chicken scene. But for me, even more so, there's a... I don't know if you just touched upon this, but basically Theo's character... inherits everything, and it skips over the brother Freddie.
I did say that, yeah.
Did you? Yes. Right, okay. Well, the scene where that unfolds is fucking brilliant because Freddie goes nuts, but there's so many tears to his, layers to his anger. And every time you think he'd reached a crescendo, something else would happen. And then there's this one bit where he goes off and then suddenly he's like, oh, no, he's back again. Like, honestly, it was just so funny. That whole scene had me... in stitches. I loved it.
It's brilliant.
That scene,
it's
yeah,
brilliant.
It's so good.
I laughed out loud multiple times, which I never ever do.
We didn't even know you had, knew what laughter was.
Exactly. Yeah. But again, it's like, so I very much enjoy comedy and drama mix. Like pure comedy, I don't enjoy as much, but comedy drama is very much my thing. And I think the genius stroke here is the casting is masterful. It's not just the writing. The writing is actually very, very good. But the casting, because Theo James, who is honestly brilliant in most of the things he does. Mm. He has such charisma in this role, and he sells that kind of posh, I am now a duke, you know, your grace. You know, he sells that brilliantly, but also has this kind of like implied eye roll all the time, which is so much fun. And his chemistry with Kaya Scott-Hilario is brilliant.
Yeah.
And it's a very sort of dangerous kind of fraught chemistry, because she is a very dangerous person. And I thought it was lovely, and sort of navigating the mountain of shit that he gets himself into in this first episode. My first thought at the end of this was, I have to watch more. Mm. I want to watch them now. It's great. It's
even
really,
his
really
relationship
good.
With Daniel Ingsoe, don't you think? Like,
yeah,
their
oh,
chemistry
yeah.
is
fabulous.
Great.
Although I obviously wanted to murder him, but you're obviously supposed to. So good. Yeah. This is so good.
I do think Theo James has taken his character from the White Lotus, who's an American kind of.
Perhaps with the prosthetic penis as well.
Well, I haven't seen Beyond episode two.
Well,
so,
we'll find out, I guess.
We'll find out.
This has been a good week for us for
prosthetic
shows.
Penises.
No.
Also, he's been naked in the last few shows he's done, hasn't he? So the White Lotus, the Time Traveller's Wife. Like,
yeah. But you're right about how charismatic he is. He's got one of those faces. I was also thought, well, he's got too many teeth through his mouth. Maybe. He's very toothy. Yeah, I've never noticed that.
Yeah.
Check that out as well. And the tea drinking. Those are the things that struck me. But he's
teeth
very
and tea.
Because actually, the character is a bit of a void in a way. Do you know what I mean? The character's not like.
I know what you mean.
But Theo James does it so well.
He imbues
it
with life.
That he imbues it. Yeah,
it's very, I think it's great. Yeah. Really enjoy The Gentleman. When can people watch that, Boydie?
Netflix, Thursday, the 7th of March. 2024.
Good, I was going to check. If you didn't say the year, I wanted you to confirm.
What else is out this week?
It's not a huge week, I would say. There's something called Super Sex.
Yes.
Which I think we're going to do
on Pilot Plus.
Special.
Yes, that involves a porn star. We're going to be doing that on Pilot Plus.
Rocco Siffredi was a real life porn star known as the Italian Stallion, and it's a true life drama based on his life. There's a thing called the Marlowe Murder Club, which I think is like a cozy crime type thing.
Is that based on the book?
It must do. It's from the guy who wrote Death in Paradise. Has written this two part. Have you watched it? Have you?
No, I haven't.
Okay, you read
it's
the
Robert
preview.
Thorogood, isn't it?
Yes. That looks kind of fun. The Oscars are on, by the way, we should mention.
Not so much TV related, but yes, it is a
they're
big thing.
TV.
They are on TV, that is true. That is true. Technically, they are on TV. You're quite right, Boydie. I apologise.
I just need to remind people that for the first time in 20 years, they're live on free-to-air television, not on Sky.
Terrestrial.
On ITV1. And ITVX.
See, I know what you're expecting, Boyd. You were thinking I would make some snarky ITV comment there, but I didn't, and I would like credit for that.
There you go. Good. Yeah, so they're on ITV, and from 10:15, Jonathan Ross hosting.
This is where we've got to with Jay-Z. You have to give him credit for not being snarky.
Yeah, I mean, that is revealing, isn't it? Jonathan Ross is hosting the UK coverage, if you like, in between the ads as the show progresses, and you can watch the red carpet coverage from 9 o'clock on ITVX.
Are you on there, Boyd?
No, I haven't been. No, not yet.
Right.
He's indignant. He's not happy.
I'm not indignant.
ITV, pull your finger out and get the real expert on.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't been on Sky's coverage for a couple of years either. So
well, as your agent, I would like you to be on there. Thanks.
Today, as we speak, James, we've started to know Celebrity Big Brother starts, also on ITV.
Who's on it? Anyone I've heard of?
We don't know. No one knows. They're doing the right thing, which is what they used to do with Celebrity Big Brother, which is genuinely keep it secret and only unveil them one by one on the night. Yeah.
Boydo.
It's exciting.
Let's do it on Plus. Let's get James.
Should we
watch
get James?
Episode.
Could be.
Yes.
No, it could
Come
be.
On.
Yeah. I mean, depending who's in it.
We can't because we're doing Super Sex, and we are also doing the first episode of Dawson's Creek.
Yeah, but that's not time sensitive. That can be pushed along. So yeah,
we've promised it. We trailed it. The last Pilot Plus.
Anyone who's listening, right? The options: Dawson Creek or Celebrity Big Brother. Let's do a little poll.
Fine. Let us know. So this will go out on Monday morning.
Yep.
We will be recording Pilot Plus on probably Tuesday afternoon. So you've got about a day to make your feelings clear on this matter.
Come on.
About a day, yeah. That's
cast your vote wisely.
That is
please wisely.
Accurate. The Reluctant Traveller of Eugene Levy Series 2 on Friday. I mean, I think we might have even reviewed Series 1, did we? If it was,
I don't think so.
I remember talking about it. Anyway, it's his travelogue show. Obviously, he's brilliant. He's very entertaining. I think that's probably about it. You know, there's something called Taking on Taylor Swift. on Discovery Plus on Monday today.
What is that?
Which is a documentary about her court. She's had various court cases, yep, actually, about her music and all that. It's covering that kind of stuff.
Maybe we'll do that on Pilot Plus. We won't.
No.
Did you say what day that was on?
Yeah, Monday today, I said.
What year, buddy?
What date?
2024, Discovery Plus, Monday, the 4th of March. yes, one off documentary.
What is our pick of this week?
Mary and George.
The Gentleman.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a hard one.
It's The Gentleman.
It's Mary and George.
It's not even close for me.
Oh, ooh.
Yeah. I thought The Gentleman was magnificent.
Oh, gosh.
Okay,
it's
the deciding vote. Oh, come on.
Okay. I'm gonna go for The Gentleman as well then, because I know I love Mary and George, but it just made me laugh so much, and also it's the most recent thing I watched. So
I mean, having sat there next to you while you're watching it on your laptop with your headphones on, cackling away like an idiot. I said, what, like an idiot? You're the one who called James an actual idiot.
Really?
Let me remind you.
He wasn't acting idiotically.
I said, like an idiot. That's absolutely that's nothing.
Oh my God.
This has been a particularly salty episode of the Pilot TV podcast.
I think we've just had a big fallout, guys.
Oh, good God. Well, I think that really does bring an end to this particularly spiky episode of the podcast. If you enjoyed it, please do head on to, I don't know, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and leave us a five rating, but yes, Kay's putting her fingers up. A five flipping the bird rating.
It's really freezing in here, by the way.
Yes, that would be.
It's gone the whole gamut. It's very symbolic. Very symbolic of the whole thing.
It's
the roller coaster. It started off like scorched heat, and it's now freezing cold, all in the space of one podcast. Listen.
Do you know what? It's reflecting the atmosphere.
It's reflecting our friendship here. It's gone from red hot to freezing
chill.
Cold. Yeah. Right. Okay, fine. And do follow us on the socials at Pilot TV Pod, at Boyd Hilton, at Kay Ribeiro, at James C. Dyer. We will be back next week. We have not discussed what we're going to be doing next week, but let's have a look. What is on? We might be
Manhunt.
Manhunt.
I think that's pretty much a cert.
On Apple TV Plus. Yes, we'll be doing that. There's, there's loads
is that
of stuff.
The You've Abe been, Lincoln one.
The Dry is next week,
the Dry
by the way.
Yes.
Yeah. Girls Five Ever, that's not happening. Yeah. Love Rat on C4.
Channel 5. Kay's very
Young Royals on Netflix.
Young Royals on Netflix,
Okay, great. Until that time, and until we do Pilot Plus, when I may or may not end up watching Celebrity Big Brother, and who knows, maybe it'll become my favourite show, just like Doctor Who is for Kay.
Unbelievable.
Oh, God.
Pilot out.